With the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Happy holidays to all of you out there, both Eagles fans and NFL draft aficionados. I'm Chris McPherson, and welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. It's been a few weeks since I've been on. I feel left out a little bit here.
It's been far too long, Chris.
Certainly. Alex Smith did a great job taking over. We're going to be alternating for the next couple weeks as the Eagles round out their season. And then we'll get back with the three-man booth. And, of course, the man who really holds the show together is none other than Fran Duffy. Fran, how are things?
Things are wonderful. Appreciate it, Chris. It's another game day here in Philadelphia, but lots to talk about, as always.
I feel like Santa Claus, like I should have brought you a gift or something for today, for the holidays.
Just you showing up is gift enough for me.
Thank you so much there. Actually, funny enough, because you watch so much tape, especially this time of year, because you're starting to get ready for Shrine Game and Senior Bowl, which you'll be covering. Actually, we hope we're not covering the Shrine.
Sure, right.
A couple weeks if the Eagles can make a run to the
playoffs.
We hope
we're not covering either.
That is true, very much so. So, nonetheless, I was thinking, for all that time you spent in front of the computer, I should get you one of those glasses where you can not have to worry about the glare in your eyes and just look like a futuristic robot as you walk around the facility. But at least, you know, try to preserve the eyesight a little bit for future drafts.
Well, you know what? Mike Quick says whenever he walks into my office is, you need a new chair because my chair is like all worn in. It's all like the shape of my body now. Like, hey, you know, he said, I need a new chair. So for Novacare Santa, that's what I would like.
We have to try to make that happen. So again, thank you very much for downloading and listening. Make sure to rate and comment wherever you consume your podcast. And make sure to check out our other offerings, the Eagles Insider podcast, as well as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. So later on in our Pick 6 segment, we'll look at some hybrid players. And the reason that that's the theme for today's show, this week's show, is the Arizona Cardinals are coming to Lincoln Financial Field to take on the Eagles. And they have a couple players like Tyrann Mathieu, who plays safety and corner. They have Deon Buchanan, who, you know, is listed as a safety but plays linebacker more often than not. Players who maybe some teams have some trouble from an evaluation standpoint because they don't quite know how they fit into the next level. Well, who are some of those players who could be available in the upcoming draft? We'll get to your questions in our draft mailbag, some very good ones for this week. But with bowl season officially underway, some underclassmen are starting to declare for the draft. Let's dig a little deeper in draft buzz.
Now it's time for draft buzz.
All right, so some not so good news to kick things off here in draft buzz, and it's one of the top prospects in the entire upcoming draft. It's Ole Miss defensive lineman Robert Kimdichie. Not a lot of production on the field this season. Some off-field questions, and now he's been suspended for the Rebels bowl game. After he had marijuana possession, he fell out of a hotel room 15 feet and was injured, was suspended by the team by Coach Hugh Freeze. He is declared for the draft, and Bruce Feldman, who's a great college football analyst for Fox Sports, said that he's going to be a tough evaluation for teams because the talent's there. But those off-the-field questions are going to make some teams shy away. So where do you think he fits into the equation, Fran?
Well, the interesting thing with Kimdichie is just the fact that he's such a explosive pass rusher from the defensive tackle spot. You know, a guy that is a one-gap penetrator, a prototypical three-technique defensive tackle, and that he can get upfield, win at the snap, and disrupt, whether it's in the run game or in the passing game. The question coming into the year was, how big, how strong is he at the point of attack? And, you know, can he hold up down after down, you know, against NFL run games? I think that he's improved in that area a little bit this year. I'm excited to dive deeper into that and see just how much he's improved, because that was my big question coming into the year. But on the field, that's what you have. You have a dynamic guy that, you know, almost in an Aaron Donald type of scenario where, yeah, a little bit undersized, but a guy that can disrupt and can win early in the down as a pass rusher. Teams are going to have to do their homework, though, and that's there's no more to say other than that is the fact that there's been a lot of issues. Can he overcome those and still be a top 10 pick?
So talent wise, in your mind, he's a top 10 guy.
I think that really it's going to come down to how many teams in the top 10 are looking for that kind of a player, and that's actually you know, I mentioned Aaron Donald before. I thought Aaron Donald was an excellent player out of Pitt. That'll be the thing when I go back and study Kamdichie coming into this year. Do I think that he was a better prospect than Aaron Donald? Where did Donald go? He went 12th?
I'll say 13.
12 or 13 to Detroit, to St. Louis. So, yeah. That'll be the interesting part. That's what it's going to come down to is how many teams will be in search of a three technique that are picking that high in the draft.
Well, I guess overall, if you were just doing a big board, regardless of teams picking, position, if you're just a top 10 best players, would he be in that?
He would
close.
It would be close.
So he's in that range.
I think he's in that range.
He's a first-round guy. He's a guy who should go in the first round.
For sure, he's a first-round guy.
Gotcha.
No question.
All right. Next guy we'll go into. Actually, we're going to take a little mock draft peek. First time that – have you guys done this?
We've done a little bit of mock draft.
Alex. Oh, yeah. The first one from Todd McShay came out this past week. So, of course, everyone wants to know, who does he have the Eagles selecting? And at this point, it would be with the 20th overall selection in the 2016 NFL Draft. The Eagles select Louisville defensive lineman Sheldon Rankins.
It's interesting.
Yes, for a lot of different reasons. So let's start with the scouting report. I'll give you what McShay said. You know, an underrated prospect, offers positional versatility, 6'2", 303 pounds, could be a disruptive force along the line there.
Yeah, and I liked Sheldon Rankins when I watched him this year, a guy that I did not watch over the summer, was one of the players that just missed the cut of guys that I had just gotten a chance to watch in those June, July, August months leading up to the season. But I would agree with Todd that he is a guy that's a disruptor. He can play a number of different positions, a number of different roles along the defensive line. I think that he could be a nose tackle, theoretically. I think he could be a three technique. He shows the ability to play in either a one-gap or two-gap scheme. The question will just be, to me, he would be what Benny Logan is in this defense. And obviously, Benny Logan playing at such a high level, I don't know that you would see a top 20 pick spent at that position.
The thing you could say is Cedric Thornton's going to be a free agent this coming off season. There are some questions about what's Fletcher Cox's long-term situation with the Eagles. He is under contract for next season. The Eagles did pick up the fifth-year option, and obviously he's had an all-world type of season. But obviously the defensive line is a position, and it's a position of depth for the Eagles right now. So it's another reason why it'd be a little bit surprising at the very least to see them pick that number 20.
Yeah, and I think too, the other thing is you look at the measurables aspect of it, and it seems like the Eagles like the bigger, taller, longer defensive linemen. And Rankins isn't necessarily, he's not a short, squatty guy, but he's not necessarily one of those big, tall, long defensive linemen. So, if they did select him to play as a nose tackle, that would require Benny Logan to slide back outside, like you said, into a defensive end spot. Now you're just talking about, how do you make the pieces fit?
Of course. Now, they did draft Logan, so that was the first year
Kelly's
tenure here. So it's not like that they wouldn't go with that body type. Some other players on the board at this position, just at this spot for the Eagles, just to give you an idea. Leonard Floyd, who I know you're a big fan of, Fran.
Correct.
Reggie Ragland,
big
outstanding
fan.
Linebacker for Alabama. Emmanuel Ogbah, you've talked about here on the podcast many times, among others. Some players who just went off the board, one of note, Taylor Decker, went at number 18. So for those of you who are thinking offensive linemen, he was, I guess, considered the last of the top four, the top tier guys to go. And there's a bit of a drop-off from there. So you would think, would the Eagles maybe try to make the move with some of those extra picks to go up there and make sure they get one of these linemen?
Yeah, I think the thing with Decker, too, is that I don't know how much versatility he has in terms of being able to play guard. I think he would be a tackle only. Definitely has the athleticism to play in this kind of a scheme. And I'll tell you what, coming into the year, I had my questions about Decker. I saw a lot more consistency, a lot more nastiness, too. That was my other question with him was, you use the term, glass eater. Does he play with sand in his shorts? That kind of thing.
I don't want a guy who has sand in his shorts.
Well, no,
that's a bad thing.
But, it's a guy, look, that, has really improved, I think, coming from his junior year to his senior year. I was pleasantly surprised with what I saw this year on tape from Decker.
All right, so some underclassmen news in addition to Kamdichie. Arizona linebacker Scooby Wright, who dealt with an injury for most of 2015, is headed for the draft. It was a foot injury that kept him sidelined. He did return for the Wildcats bowl game. That was his first appearance since early in the year. But you go back to 2014, he was phenomenal, winning a slew of awards, including the Chuck Benarek Award. Reading on Twitter where he might go in the draft, I've read some things that he could be a first, second round pick. Think of like a Shaq Thompson type player, and I've seen some reports that he's a mid to late round guy at best. So what's your evaluation of Scooby Wright?
I would lean more towards the latter. Yeah. Okay. I think that overall, when you've got a guy like Scooby Wright, you have a tough, instinctive, physical linebacker who's got the ability to come downhill, can play inside of that box, inside the tackle box, but not necessarily a guy who's an explosive athlete, takes a few steps to get going, can be a bit of a liability in pass coverage. They play a very unique system there in that 3-3 stack. And he's just a guy that is able to produce between the hashes, but can he make plays outside that area? That'll be the big question when it comes to Scooby Wright. But then also the other issue, too, gets stuck on blocks often. You know, and he's not, you know, one of these long arms. He's not like a Reggie Ragland who's got, you know, strong physical hands with the ability to, you know, keep blockers at bay. He got stuck on blocks a lot, especially in traffic. When he was forced to move outside those hashes, he did get stuck on blocks a little bit more than I'd like to see. So to me, especially in the stacked linebacker crew, we've talked about all the different players. You know, Miles Jack has declared. Jalen Smith from Notre Dame is rumored to declare. A lot of other big names. Sua Cravens is coming out. There are a lot of big-name players at that position that are entering the draft. Wright, I would think, is a step below all of those guys.
All right, another underclassman declaring, Kendall Fuller. You might recognize the last name, brother of former first-round pick of the Chicago Bears, Kyle Fuller, also plays corner. Now, he missed pretty much the entire season with a torn meniscus, but he should be healthy in time for the upcoming season. What's your take on Kendall Fuller and maybe as a comparison to his brother who had just come out?
Yeah, I thought that the older Fuller, a little bit more athletic. But this kid's a good player. You know, I think that Fuller has the ability to play in a press scheme, play in an off scheme, and I'm excited to do a little bit more work on him. He did miss the latter part of the season with the injury, but a guy that really stood out to me as a sophomore last year. They've got a number of different players in that secondary that have been able to make plays, and Fuller is another one in the line. He's just a guy that can, like I said, can be scheme versatile, shows the ball skills to be able to make plays with the ball in the air. He's an intriguing guy.
All right, some quarterback news, and it's nothing official just yet, but obviously we're all waiting to see whether Penn State quarterback Christian Hackenberg is going to declare for the draft. And you and Alex touched on the coaching news at Penn State last week that the former Fordham head coach Joe Moorhead is going to be the new offensive coordinator for the Nittany Lions. And with the type of scheme that he runs, it seems like Hackenberg is not going to be a fit and makes it more likely that he'll end up declaring for the draft.
Yeah, and the interesting thing with Hackenberg is, look, I think really when it comes down to it, it's going to be one of two things. You're either going to be a fan of his talent and what he can be, or you think he's got no shot. And because regardless, the way you look at it right now, he's not ready. You know, I was hoping that he would be able to take some steps this year, and really the offense didn't really change. The personnel didn't really improve other than the running. They were able to get the running game going a little bit in the second half of the season. But you still have a guy who has the physical tools, has the size, has the arm talent, shows the ability to be able to work in a pocket and throw with anticipation, do some pro-style things that are really, really intriguing. But overall, you didn't see a guy who was consistently accurate. You didn't see a guy who was consistently stout in the face of pressure, and that's going to be the big issue. So you don't necessarily have a guy that's ready-made for the NFL right now. I'm still a fan of his talent, and I think that he can be something. It'll just require him going to the right coaching staff.
He needs Bill O'B.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It might not just be Bill O'B. I think he could go to, you know, to North Turner and be fine too. You know, any of these coaches that are 5-7 step drop back pass teams, you know, that's where he's got the ability to thrive.
All right, so let's transition to your Saturday scouting column, which made its return yesterday with the bowl season getting underway, and we'll look at a couple of the results that happened. One of the players you spotlighted was quarterback Jeff Driscoll of Louisiana Tech, who finished off his college career in style with 457 yards and 3 touchdowns on 26 of 37 passing in a 47-28 win over Arkansas State in the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl. Threw for over 4,000 yards, 27 total touchdowns on the entire season. He will be attending the Senior Bowl. So former Florida prospect, transfer, obviously has a lot of talent, finally found a place where he could showcase it.
Yeah, and he was a big-time recruit coming out of high school. There's a very decorated career, and everyone was expecting big things when he arrived in Gainesville, and it just didn't work out for a number of different reasons. And he was pretty much written off. You know, when he transferred out, he said, all right, he ended up at Louisiana Tech. Okay, that's the end of Jeff Driscoll. Well, he showed up, and a couple of months later, he was named a captain. Within a few weeks, everybody, you know, they knew, okay, he's going to be the leader, one of the leaders of this football team. showed up, and really this year has really, really stood out. And, you know, I kind of put off watching him because, you know, I kind of had these preconceived notions. I had seen what he was, you know, at Florida. So I'm not going to put time into watching Jeff Driscoll yet. Then he gets the Senior Bowl invite, and, you know, and announces that he will attend. And I'm like, all right, well, obviously I have to watch him now. So let's put a few games in. Ended up watching four games and came away really, really impressed. You know, a guy that was consistently pretty accurate, showed the ability to work in the pocket, showed the ability to make good decisions, was really smart with the football. Not going to wow you with his arm, but shows enough that I think that he's got the ability to be an NFL quarterback. Now, is he going to be a day one starter? No, not in my opinion, probably not. But a guy that I think has the ability to last in the league for a long time and kind of fits in with a lot of these other senior quarterbacks. And we've talked in the past about the Cody Kesslers and the Kevin Hogans and the Sudfelds and the Jacoby Brissetts. I mean, you go on and on. You can add Jeff Driscoll's name to that list.
It'll be interesting if Hackenberg declares, because right. He goes right into that mix as well.
It absolutely does. And you know, Cardale Jones and Jared Goff and Paxton Lynch and Carson Wentz. And, you know, this is a good quarterback group.
Top to bottom.
Yeah,
The question is, I believe Paxton Lynch in Todd McShay's mock draft went number two.
I believe so.
Overall. And I think Carson Wentz also went in the back half of the first round. So I think those are the only two quarterbacks to come off the board in the first round. I guess the question is, where are these other guys going to fit in if there isn't really that obvious Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota type guy at the top this year? Where do these other guys fit in?
Yeah, it'll be a lot like what we saw in 2013, where you had we had Blake Bortles go top five, so mm-hmm. that could be Paxton Lynch, and both in the same conference. By the way, from the AAC. So now you've got a quarterback that goes top five. You have a couple other quarterbacks that sneak in. Manziel snuck into the back end of round one. Teddy Bridgewater went with the second to last pick of the first round. And then you had a couple guys go on, you know, rounds two, round three. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to see more quarterbacks go in that stage of the game, in that day two of the draft. So we'll see how it all ends up. But I think it's a good group overall.
All right, let's go to the running back position. San Jose State running back Tyler Irvin gained 132 yards on 30 carries in a 27-16 win over Georgia State in the Auto Nation Cure Bowl. Didn't really have too many explosive plays. He did have an 85-yard punt return for a touchdown, but on the ground, he pretty much was consistent throughout the course of the game. The big question that you noted in your column, Fran, was that at 5'10", 177 pounds, what will he project to at the next level? You'll at least get to see him potentially in person. Has he accepted invites to both the Shrine Game and the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, and so I didn't know. I knew who he was, and I knew he was very productive when I saw that he accepted the invitation to go to the Shrine Game. And when I saw that, I said, all right, well, I'm going to watch him, because if we go down there, I would like to see him before I see him in person. And I was blown away. I thought, wow, this kid is one of the best senior running backs in the country, without question. And a couple weeks later, he got the announcement for the Senior Bowl. So I was not surprised to see that whatsoever, because you have a guy who's creative with the football in his hands. He's got good vision. He's decisive. He's got good wiggle. He can make people miss in the open field. Like I said, he's decisive downhill. He can catch the ball well. I mean, everything you want from one of those, you know, creative, make-you-miss type running backs, Irvin's able to do. The question is, at 177 pounds, how much will he be able to handle at the next level? Can he be almost what Gio Bernard has been now for the Cincinnati Bengals over the last 2 years, is almost a 1A, 1B type player along with Jeremy Hill? Can he serve in that kind of a role, or is he more of the third down type specialist? So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Irvin. But overall, I think absolutely has NFL ability. I think he's one of the best senior running backs in this class. I would say a step below Louisiana Tech's Kenneth Dixon, but for sure one of the best seniors in this class.
I'm trying to look up the size on Gio Bernard, because I don't think of him as that, at that size, as that small, if he is or not. I'm actually seeing.
Yeah, he was, you know, coming out of North Carolina, that was the big question with him was, you know, yeah, he's quick. He catches the ball well out of the backfield. He can do a lot of different things with the ball in his hands, and he's able to create. He's got third down value. But can he hold up as an every down feature back at the NFL level? They used him that way to a certain extent in his rookie season, and everyone, you know, thought the arrow was pointing up. Then they draft Jeremy Hill in the second round, and it kind of told you what they thought of him.
He's listed at 205 pounds. 5'9", 205 pounds.
I'd be interested to see what he
style-wise, I'm sure. And it obviously could be different from when he came out of North Carolina.
That's what I'd be interested to see, is what he was coming out of UNC? Because I think that was one of the big questions with him.
All right, we'll go to a defensive prospect who you looked at in your Saturday scouting piece, BYU's Bronson Kafusi. BYU lost this game to Utah in the Las Vegas Bowl 35-28, but Kafusi's performance was so good that it led Chase Goodbread's notes package on NFL.com. The senior had 9 tackles, 3 for loss, and a pass breakup. For the season, he finished with 20 tackles for loss. Comes in at 6'8", 280 pounds. And did you know that his dad, Steve, played for the Eagles?
You know, I usually write that stuff down in my notes, you know, looking at the kids' bio pages. I did not know that. So there you go.
I found some friend. I was so pumped.
You beat me to it.
I was so pumped. Because I was actually trying to find out, being from BYU, his age.
Right.
Because typically those guys will come out a little bit older.
Sure.
So from what I could gather, I could not find the exact age. But he was high school class of 2010, so he's going to be still in that 23
yeah,
or so range.
Yeah, he should be in that range.
Not,
right.
It's not going to be anything obscene or crazy, but going through and looking up different things, I saw his dad played for the Eagles in the late 80s, and I was like, I wonder if Fran knows this one or not.
That's
so.
A good one. Kafusi is interesting. You know, a guy that – and his dad is actually the defensive line coach at BYU.
Yes.
Coaches him there for the Cougars. But, look, you don't see often guys that size being able to drop into coverage and do some different things. And, you know, I can remember a play – earlier this year where he was lined up standing up in the A-gap and then he dropped back into coverage helping out in a bracket in the slot over the slot receiver. I mean, you don't see guys that are that size being able to do things like that. But a guy that when he's rushing the passer, he still has a lot to learn in terms of how to use his hands and things like that. But a guy that shows the ability to – an improved ability, really, because there were a lot of questions for me coming into this year because I watched him over the summer – because he's got that size, and I was really, really intrigued because he stood up mostly last year. So imagine this, you know, that guy, what is he, 265, something along those lines, you know, standing up.
Well, it says he listed at 280.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, he was a very, very intriguing guy for his size speed. But, again, wanted to see him get a little bit better with his hands as a pass rusher, and I thought he did that coming into this year. Still like to see him grow a little bit. He's only going to the Shrine game, I believe, so we'll see what he looks like in person. But definitely an intriguing guy, and he had a huge bowl game.
It'll be interesting if he bulked up
yeah.
to play the end spot, or maybe he'll maybe slim yeah. down a little bit, depending on, I guess, where coaches think that he'll project to the next level.
Yeah, and that's you kind of look, and I think I wrote it in my notes, was, you know, can he be – you know, I remember at the Shrine game a few years ago out of South Carolina, Devin Taylor. And Devin, mm-hmm. now Devin Taylor's a starter now for the Detroit Lions. You know, can he be – one of these guys that plays now for Cincinnati or Minnesota, one of these long defensive ends that play in the rotation, you know, can he lose a little bit more weight and play standing up for like Arizona because they've got some big long, you know, Alex Okafor out mm-hmm. of Texas a couple years ago is now a starter at right outside linebacker for the Cardinals. All kinds of different possibilities. He could add weight and become a five technique. There's lots of different possibilities for Kafusi.
All right, that's going to do it for our draft buzz. Now let's transition into pick six.
Now it's time for Pick 6.
All right, for this week's Pick 6, with the Arizona Cardinals coming to town, and they have some hybrid players, guys who, you know, maybe don't fit the mold of a typical position, a position or a player you would envision at that spot, but, you know, the coaching staff does a great job of making it work with guys like Tyrann Mathieu, who is listed at the safety, but he plays some slot corner. You have Deion Buchanan, who's listed at safety, but he's more of an inside backer for the team. So who are some hybrid type players who are going to be available in this year's draft? And to start things off, we'll go to Duke, a player who we've talked about before in the podcast. And it's almost like I don't even want to say the position to give people the sense of what it is, but defensive back Jeremy Cash, 6 feet even, 209 pounds is what he's listed at, 101 tackles for the season, 18 for loss, 2.5 sacks. But here's a question I have for someone who plays this position: no interceptions.
Yep. He had a few last year, and I remember writing in my notes last year that they were all kind of gimme interceptions, where you know, maybe it was a batted ball that, you know, fell right into his lap, or one where there was just nobody around him and the quarterback threw it right to him. Look, it's been very, very productive, no question about it. And his tackles, his tackle numbers are going to be, because I chart all that stuff in terms of the last 5 years at each position. And he's in the 90th plus percentile for tackles for the safety position. A guy that's obviously very, very adept at playing near the line of scrimmage. He plays what's called the strike position in that defense as a slot defender, and what's basically a big nickel base defense. He lines up stacked behind the defensive line. He'll be pressed over the tight end. He'll get flexed into the slot over wide receivers or tight ends. He's got a good size for the safety position. You talked about just about 210 pounds. He is instinctive. There's no question about that. He also has no problem just playing near the line of scrimmage, and he just shows the ability to take on tackles, take on tight ends, using his hands, you know, can set the edge, understands angles and leverage in the run game. He's a good blitzer, and that's, you know, I can remember him running a triple A gap blitz against Virginia Tech this year and getting the sack, and I'm like, oh, this guy could play right now for, you know, for the Cardinals or for the Jets or for Rex Ryan and be able to do all those types of things. The question is he's never played in the deep half of the field. I mean, they don't use him that way. And what's one of the big things, remember all the conversations we had about Landon Collins last year, and one of the big things that Greg Cosell always said about Collins was Nick Saban is telling all of us what he thinks about Landon Collins and how he uses him. Even when they play quarters coverage with four deep defenders, Jeremy Cash is playing underneath. They never play him deep, and you know he gave up a touchdown catch in man coverage to the redshirt sophomore tight end Bucky Hodges in that Virginia Tech game in man coverage where he was just late breaking on the ball. I mean, he's going to have to go to a team where they have a very specific plan for how he's used. I thought, you know, I didn't see Dion Buchanan as a first round pick coming out of Washington State. I think Buchanan's better than Cash. And obviously Buchanan has been perfect for what they wanted him, and they had a very specific plan for him. So if a team sees Cash and says we want to use him in that way, he may be very, very productive. But I just don't know that if he goes anywhere else that he will be that way.
It's not going to be a flavor for everyone.
No,
basically,
certainly not. And, you know, because that's the thing is I don't even know that he could play even that traditional strong safety where you know only a good chunk of the time he's playing down low. I mean, I think that. He would have to play. He'd have to become basically a linebacker. Really, what Buchanan has become, what Mark Barron has become for the St. Louis Rams. You know, very much in that vein.
All right, number two guy, a guy we've talked about on the podcast before, Sua Cravens of USC, who declared for the draft, 6'1", 225 pounds. I guess question with him is he going to be big enough to be a linebacker, or is he going to be sort of, you know, the Shaq Thompson type guy? I know we talked about that with Scooby Wright. But a lot of people are going to make that comparison, I think, as well when it comes to Cravens. Now, Thompson went late first round to the Carolina Panthers. Does Cravens have that kind of talent, at least from a production standpoint? You know, two interceptions, 14.5 tackles for loss, 5.5 sacks this season, 78 total tackles. How highly coveted will he be? I know you had some questions about him coming into the season.
Yeah, coming into the year, I did. And, you know, then I saw that Stanford game earlier in the year. And he really opened my eyes a little bit. You know, he showed the ability that, you know, he had the potential to play linebacker at the NFL level. Now, there were other games. I watched the Notre Dame game, a couple other games this year where, you know, there was more down than up. But I think that he has shown that he can play that position. And it's interesting because we just talked about Jeremy Cash. You know, Cravens plays a very similar type role. And, you know, the defenses are different. So, yeah, one defense, they call it the strike. And basically, Sua Cravens basically lines up as a 3-4 outside linebacker. But they're asked to do a lot of the same things, and one's called a linebacker by most services, and the other's called the safety. So it's just interesting how that works out. But you know, Cravens is interesting because you have a guy who's got really good athleticism. I think he's a better athlete than Jeremy Cash. So I think that that's what really gives him a little bit more value from the linebacker position, because you have a guy who's adept at playing in space and knows what he's doing out in space in zone coverage and in man coverage, but then also has the ability to play in the box. Whereas Cash, you know, really, even as a linebacker, you know, I don't know if you're going to want to put him on tight ends at the next level. I just don't know. You know, if you're going up against Jimmy Graham, if you're going up against Jordan Reed, I don't know that you're going to want Jeremy Cash out there one-on-one against that kind of guy.
All right, the third guy on the list, Virginia Tech's Daddy Nicholas, 6'3", 233 pounds, had 40 tackles, 5.5 for a loss, and one sack this season.
Yeah, the one sack is going to be a killer for him, you know, because he coming into the year, a lot of people viewed him as one of the top senior pass rushers. I know I viewed him that way, certainly, and a guy that's a little bit undersized. You mentioned 233 pounds. It's interesting because watching that defense, they play him in a number of different roles, and against Ohio State, they played a lot of that bare front, and he basically played as a three-technique defensive tackle, and he just got worked up and down the field by their right guard, Pat Elflein, who announced he's going to stay in school. He was just an outstanding interior lineman. Elflein worked him up and down the field. But a guy that really is very good athlete, explosive off the ball, can win with his hands, can win with his feet, shows the ability to drop in coverage as well. High motor guy, just a really, really interesting player to watch. But the production's going to scare some people, no question about it. And, you know, I've heard some people say maybe he plays inside as a stacked linebacker. Maybe he has to play as an outside linebacker in a 4-3. Does he have to play in a wide nine type system just because of that size? But no question about it, a very interesting player for sure. And I think he's flying under the radar a little bit right now. And we remember the pass rusher coming out of LSU last year whose name is escaping me at the moment. But
Danelle Hunter?
Yes, Danelle Hunter, who I really, really liked. Danelle Hunter.
Yeah.
Ended up going to Minnesota, and I think he's been very effective for them so far this year. The production was not there, and that was the big question. Everyone harped on it. Well, he was not very productive for LSU last year. That's going to be the big question with Nicholas this year, but I still think he's going to have the ability to be a drafted in first three rounds. I mean, I think he's that kind of a talent without question.
The thing is, when I think of LSU, you bring up Hunter, usually there are other guys who are very productive. So maybe it's, you know, Hunter is doing the dirty work to allow the other guys to have success. Is that the case with Nicholas?
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of guys in that Virginia Tech front. You know, you have the Corey Marshalls and the Luther Maddies, guys that aren't necessarily on the same scale as what you would think from LSU. But Nicholas, especially the way he was used, you know, Ohio State, and he was asked to do a lot of contain, you know, because they were going up against Cardale Jones, a lot of things to try and keep him in the pocket. I want to continue to go through more game film, but a guy that it was interesting just to see how he was used because there was a lot of different ways there for the Hokies.
All right, so the fourth guy, Eric Stryker, another linebacker safety hybrid, 6 feet even, 222 pounds, 61 tackles, 16 for a loss on the season, 7.5 sacks, and an interception.
Yeah, and he's lines up as the outside linebacker in that 3-4 scheme. He's really just an explosive kid. He's got a quick first step. He's got great closing speed in the open field. He can play in coverage. Physically, he can do anything you want in space. He's just a frustrating player to watch. And every time I've watched him, whether it be this year or last year, you know, I've come away just wanting a little bit more because you see all the physical skills. But then, you know, you think, okay, he can be a dynamic chess piece for a defense. But too many times I thought he was a little bit of too much of a spectator, you know, around contact, you know, where he just feel okay with letting somebody else make the play. I think at his best, he can be a Von. We've talked about it, you know, the very first podcast we did this season, he could be a Von Miller type strong side linebacker. We're not talking about a top five pick, but a guy that can play that type of role for a defense, you know. But every time I've watched him, I've been left wanting more. I think he'll have to earn it to be that kind of role. But again, the ability there to be a dynamic kind of movable chess piece for a defense coordinator.
All right, we talked about the running Rebels defense throughout the course of the year at Ole Miss, and Kimdichie is the big guy that we talk about. But what about linebacker C.J. Johnson, 6'2", 236 pounds. Now, he missed a bunch of games this season due to a meniscus injury.
Correct.
But still, 39 tackles, 2 interceptions, 1.5 tackles for loss.
Yeah, and he's interesting because he played defensive end in that 4-3 scheme up until this year. Then he made the switch to middle linebacker. So a guy at 236 pounds who was playing with his hand in the dirt, rushing the passer, now all of a sudden as a stacked middle linebacker in that scheme. It was a very big transition for him. But I thought, that, you know, I was pretty impressed. After watching two games, I was intrigued because he's got the mindset for the position. He can play downhill well. I was surprised, really, with his instincts, especially in coverage. You know, he didn't look like a fish out of water in space. I'd like to see him get better as a tackler, and I wonder why, you know, he wasn't really an every-down player for them. And I wonder, okay, well, maybe he's not an every-down player because not necessarily because of ability, but just because he's making that transition. It was still early in the season. But, you know, I think he's got ability in coverage. I think he's got ability downhill. Obviously, as a pass rusher because of his history outside. I like him, though, because he's a bit on the smaller side. I'll be interested to see if teams see him more as an off-the-ball linebacker or as a pass rusher, but I think that he's got that versatile chess piece mentality as well.
All right, the last guy in our pick six, Oklahoma defensive lineman Charles Tapper, comes in at 6'4", 283 pounds, 45 tackles, 10 for loss, and 7 sacks on the season.
Yeah, I love Tapper, and I actually just watched him again this past week because I just kind of going through guys from the Senior Bowl, and I watched him last year, and he made one of the most athletic plays on tape that I saw all of 2014 when he batted a pass against Oklahoma, actually, or against Clemson, actually, in the bowl game last year. Knocked it up in the air, picked it off, ran it back to the house, ended up coming back because one of his teammates jumped off sides. But really, really impressive play. I love his positional versatility, not only because he can line up anywhere along the line. I mean, they play him. He's a defensive end in that 3-4. He lines up anywhere from nose all the way out to 7 technique in a 4-3. But Also because I think he can hold up in a one gap or a two gap scheme. He's got the ability to hold up at the point of attack, but then also shoot gaps and penetrate into the backfield. Ultimately, I think that's where his best fit is, you know, getting into opposing backfields, disrupting early in the down. But regardless of where he lands, you know, he's a kid with a good size. He's got good athleticism. He's got a high motor. He knows how to use his hands. He might never be a superstar, but one of those guys that will be a starter for a long, long time. I'm a big fan of Tapper. Really interested to see where he ends up.
All right, so that's going to do it for our pick six, a look at hybrid players, where are these guys going to fit in at the next level. We're going to finish that off and now transition to our final segment, which is your questions in our draft mailbag.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, it's our final segment here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. It's time for your questions in our draft mailbag and some really good ones this week. First one comes from PA's Finest, who goes by at MBFF01 on Twitter. Throws a hypothetical situation for you, Fram.
Very hypothetical.
Okay, so this would be, obviously, the Eagles would have to have a very, very high draft pick. Doesn't look like that's going to happen at this point. But if Laremy Tunsil, Ronnie Stanley... I won't throw Corey Coleman into it because I believe he's going.
He is in there. No, he is
he's in the draft. Draft. He's in the draft. Yep. He is in the draft. Okay. I know Will Fuller is not airing draft.
Correct.
That was the big name receiver who is not going to come out. So Laquan Treadwell and Leonard Floyd are there for the Birds. How would you rank them?
You know, I think Tunsil might be the best player overall.
For the Eagles.
Draft.
I should also say it's for the Eagles.
Yeah. Well, I think that Tunsil might be the best player in the draft, period. You know, I'll throw that out there. But I would say if you had to put it in order, I would say Tunsil, one. I think Floyd, especially, you know, if you're going to say for the Eagles and what they can need, you know, you add a pass rusher like Floyd to this team, I think that that could go a long way. So I would throw Floyd there at number two. Stanley, I think, is interesting because, you know, I remember talking to some guys there that covered Notre Dame on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, well, you know, yeah, Stanley's a good player, but he's got some boomer bust type, you know, mentality where – you're not exactly sure what you're going to get from Stanley. So he'll be interesting. Obviously, talented player, has the ability to play left tackle, but then also, you know, potentially could shift inside the guard. I think he's got that body type. So, you know, I think that's what you're looking for if you're the Eagles, is somebody to play guard right now that potentially maybe down the road slide outside the tackle. But I would say, okay, you got Tunsil, Floyd, Stanley, and then it just comes down to everyone talks about fit, you know, who fits the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this in the past with receivers. I mean, they've brought in receivers that are all kinds of different body types. So I don't know necessarily that, you know, Corey Coleman versus Laquan Treadwell, who fits and who doesn't. I think it just comes down to what you want, because I think they're both just different kinds of receivers.
You need speed.
Yeah, then you're Coleman. Then you want Corey Coleman.
I mean, that's the thing. You look at this offense and what it needs right now. I think it needs a little injection of speed at the next level. So hopefully one of those guys will be able to present it for them. That's why I wanted your take when I saw the mock draft that McShay did, and Floyd was still on the board, but the Eagles didn't select him at 20. Is that the guy who you probably would go with?
Yeah, I would, and I like Floyd more than Rankins anyway, so it's not even like, oh, you know, going with the need over the – I think Floyd is a top 15 type talent, and I know he's not being talked about necessarily. You know, I think people are saying, hey, okay, he's a first-round pick. I think Floyd is going to be a quote-unquote, you know, one of these risers over the course of the next few months.
All right, next question comes from our good friend Oh Wow Whom, who's – name for this week is Gary Litzfarald. He always does a play on words with the opponent of the week. Picking in the 20s means you're going to get a flawed prospect. Who are some one-tool type players that you like?
Well, I will preface this by saying...
you went back and forth with him to clarify the question.
I wanted to clarify with him, but then also every player in some way, shape, or form is flawed.
Correct.
I mean,
yes.
It's very rare that you're going to get somebody. I would say the closest, you might have two players right now in this draft. Any guesses as to who I would say aren't too flawed right now, from what I've seen so far?
Right now in the draft.
Yes. Two underclassmen.
Let's see. Of the So Tunsil, I think, would be one.
I would say Tunsil, yep. Who hasn't actually officially declared.
Declared,
pretty
but
much
it looks like he's going to be there.
Yep.
The second one, let's see. I would think... Is it Ragland?
It is not. It is Ezekiel Elliott.
Oh, Ezekiel Elliott.
He's
okay.
A guy who I look at and I'm like, wow.
Yeah, okay.
There's not too many flaws there.
I completely forget that he's going to be in this draft class. So.
So two players. And this is a good question. So I went back and I was looking for two players, and they're not first-round picks. These guys aren't guys that I would say, okay. You know, and that's, I guess that was what he was kind of shooting at for that question. But I think that if you're talking straight up one tool players, like this guy is someone that they're good at one thing.
Yes.
I would say first start look at a guy that's going to be at the East-West Shrine Game, and that's NC State corner Justin Burris. He's 6'1", 207 pounds. I think he's one of the best press corners in the draft. Very, very sound at the line of scrimmage, disrupts receivers with ease consistently every single time I've watched him. The question will be with him, what kind of an athlete is he and what is his long speed like? And we know how big speed is for the cornerback position. If he can check those boxes at the combine and at the Shrine Game, I think that you know teams will be comfortable with drafting him a little bit earlier than he's being talked about. But right now, I think, okay, you want somebody who can press and disrupt early in the down? That's Justin Burris without question. I mean, he's got the ability to hold up receivers immediately. And then another guy a little bit closer to home here, Penn State tight end Kyle Carter, 6'3", 250 pounds, athletic, movable chess piece, has the raw tools, but really hasn't developed much during his career at Penn State. You know, he's got the movement skills, the athleticism to be a weapon. His route running is only incrementally improved. His blocking hasn't really taken the next step. Really until just even this year. Still, you know, I think he has improved in some key areas. He's naturally just very good at the catch point. So I think if you say one tool and you have a guy, okay, he's just very, very good at the in the passing game and really just needs to come along in the run game, I think Carter kind of fits the bill there.
All right, next question comes from Jack at JPL730 on Twitter. Wants to know who are the best edge rushers in the draft who would fit the Eagles' scheme? And we talked about Leonard Floyd, we talked about Danny Nicholas. Who are maybe some other guys that might fit the bill?
Yeah, well, this edge rush class is going to be interesting because a lot of people are talking. You know, obviously Joey Bosa, it's presumed that he's going to declare, pretty much said that he was going to do so a few weeks back. But you've got Bosa, who's going to probably go top five. You have Floyd, who, again, I think is going to go top 15. I think Nicholas is a guy who's very, very explosive and can do a lot of different things in space. So depending on what kind of a player you want, really, it comes down to two things. Do you want one of those speed, explosive, bend the edge, turn the corner type players? Or are you happier with a guy that, you know, maybe he's a little bit squattier, like a Brandon Graham, who, mm-hmm. you know, isn't necessarily that guy that's always going to win with speed and shows the ability to win with power? Or do you want a big, long, almost like a Bronson Cafusi type of player that wins with power, wins with leverage, and things like that? Because I think there's more of those last two groups than there are of the former, where you have guys that are just going to win with, you know, their explosive first step or with their flexibility to turn the corner. There's lots of different, as Mike Mayock had said earlier a few weeks back, a lot of different flavors in this pass rush class.
All right, so next question comes from Sean Lamont at FlySeanFly on Twitter. Are there any draft prospects for Andy you look at and say, wow, he would be a perfect fit for this Eagles team?
That's a good question. So I wrote some names down because I didn't want to come into this one cold. So I would say one guy that I've talked about for a while is Maryland cornerback Sean Davis, a guy I've compared in the past to Eric Rowe. So obviously you can make the comparison as to why I think he would be a good fit here in Philadelphia. I think he's very, very similar in a press corner that can play both corner and safety. You know, and then you look at the defensive line, and I think this is a good defensive line group overall. We don't know, obviously, what the Eagles' needs would be at this position. So, you know, you look at DeForest Buckner from Oregon, you look at Kenny Clark from UCLA, two guys that I think are first-round type talents. The Eagles probably aren't going to be selecting defensive linemen that high, but two guys I think absolutely would be a great fit in Philadelphia. Kansas State offensive tackle, Cody Whitehair. I watched him again this week, and I really, really like him. I mean, he's a good athlete, very under control when he's on the move, very strong hands, shows the ability to anchor against a bull rush, plays left tackle, but I think he's a guard at the next level. So, you know, he's got some positional versatility there. Very, very smart, powerful, athletic kid that I'm a big fan of. So I really like Cody Whitehair. Connor McGovern, the offensive lineman from Mizzou, I think fits, you know, in terms of his athleticism as well. He's got eye-popping weight room numbers, so a lot of people will point to that. Leonard Floyd, we've talked about. Kenneth Dixon, I love Kenneth Dixon, so maybe it's just you know, me wanting him, but you know, I think Kenneth Dixon would be a great fit as well.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got their guys.
I would not be adverse to the Eagles' strategy if they went in this direction, where say if they could stabilize things on offense, say, you know, you have your quarterback, say Sam Bradford is the guy, and he's here, you know, for next year and beyond.
Sure.
That you just invest more and more resources into that defense. And say, you know what, Chip Kelly, he knows offense. He's going to get that side of the ball corrected. Obviously, they're going to need to infuse some youth into the offensive line moving forward. But maybe they just take the approach of, we're just going to put as much into the defense as possible, try to build up that side of the football to be the best that it can be. And then you look at offensively, they've already invested a lot in the wide receiver position.
Yep.
I would still say they probably do need a little jolt of speed. Then you have the offensive line, which we all know needs to be fixed. Running back, stable, is pretty much set. Tight end, you're in good position at. So it'd be interesting to see if maybe they take that approach. Like, even though some might argue the defensive side of the ball has been the better side this year, just go all out and keep improving that side.
Yeah, and it's going to come down to, we'll see how everything works this offseason with contracts, because on both sides of the ball, there's their share of questions there for the Eagles. But you know me, I've always been a best player available type person. So, you know, depending on who's on the board at certain areas of the draft, you almost just look at, okay, where are the strong points in this draft right now? The defensive side, there's, you know, I think that there's a couple nice safeties, but not, you know, it's not a great group. Corner, I think it'll be very, very much dependent on the underclassmen that come out. If a lot of underclassmen don't come out, the top of this cornerback draft's not going to be very high. Pass rush group, there's a few names, but nothing. You're not going, you know, you're not jumping through hoops to get Jordan Jenkins from Georgia. You're not jumping through hoops to get Kafusi. I mean, you know, the guys that are nice players, but overall, the best group, I think, is the inside linebacker and defensive line, and those are probably the two best groups for the Eagles. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all works out.
All right, I think that's going to do it for us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Again, make sure to rate and comment wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you very, very much for listening. For Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. That's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back next week, I believe, even with the holiday. We'll figure out a way to squeeze
it out.
We'll get it in there. Another edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Thanks for listening.